like I said, it wasn't an element of the crime.
But that doesn't answer to a different question, because the factual basis, does it not, needs to support the crime of which he stands convicted?
Well, sure, but if the crime didn't exist at the time, and you're saying to apply this retroactively, I don't know how it's fair to the state to not give them an opportunity to adduce that evidence, or you know, however you want to do that. But that takes basically starting over. And I think this court in State v. Trowbridge said that when that comes into play, when you require basically the proceeding to start over, that indicates it's not retroactively applied.
So your argument is, if the new statute had been in place, then the state would have had an opportunity to investigate alcohol.
And I don't know beyond, because we're in a plea context, I don't know beyond the factual basis and the PSI what occurred. But there might have been evidence or their investigation to be taken. And you got to remember, too, that this is, the Randolph Doctrine is a doctrine of statutory interpretation. You're looking at whether the statute applies retroactively. We're not just limited to this case. There could
be
other cases.
Should the plea have been withdrawn?
I suppose the
state could come in and assert a different factual basis if they had such additional facts?
I suppose that could have happened, say, at the plea hearing or at sentencing, if he moved to withdraw and then quash the information. Because, you know,
but here,
but that didn't happen.
The bill passed in, excuse me, in April 2014, and Duncan entered his plea October, which was about 6 months later. So the state had an opportunity, did they not, to determine whether it was alcohol?
Well,
in the system? Excuse me.
Well, I don't know at that point that the state really did. I mean, we're talking, you know, almost more than a year after the incident occurred. I don't know how they would.
You're saying it's gone.
It's gone. If they had it, maybe, you know, something could have been done to change it. But at that stage of the game, we're looking at restarting the criminal proceeding to get that evidence in. This court said in State v. Trowbridge that type of consideration means that it should not be applied retroactively. And I still don't think that diminishes the proposition of law that we have here from Pfeiffer and Crisp. It says if it repeals the old statute and defines new categories of crime, it is not applied retroactively. Because of the very difficulties that you guys are considering, or your honors are considering, if it were to be applied retroactively. So really, I don't think you even get into the question of was there alcohol in the system here, because the statute's not applied retroactively. Randolph Doctrine doesn't apply. There's no error in the sentence, and the judgment should be affirmed. Unless there are any other questions, I'll leave it at that, and I'll submit it.
Thank you very much. Mr. Elliott, it's my understanding that you've waived rebuttal. Thank you very much. We will go on then to State versus Frederick E. McSwine. This is a PFR. Ms. Klein, good morning again to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Please support Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state. Your Honor, this is, as noted by the court, the state's petition for further review from the Court of Appeals opinion, which reversed and remanded this case for a new trial. The defendant testified at trial that the subject of the text messages was this trespass, that he had run through a house in Eagle, Nebraska, and that was why he was saying he was going to have to either run to a reservation or run to Mexico and hide just because of this particular trespass, not because he had raped a woman, not because he had engaged in drug use, not because he had sold drugs, not because he had assaulted somebody, but because of this dastardly trespass. The state, in its closing argument, told the jury that the only evidence of this trespass are the defendant's own statements, and that is, in fact, an entirely accurate factual statement. The Court of Appeals erred when it said that this was misleading because there was, in fact, what the Court of Appeals referred to as evidence of of the trespass.
Didn't the prosecutor say there's no evidence that supports that contention?
I think, no, I believe the prosecutor's statement was that there was no... his statement, that his testimony essentially, I don't remember exactly what the words were, but essentially it was his testimony is the only thing that supports the fact that this trespass occurred.
No evidence to back up.
Basically, yeah. And that was an accurate statement of the evidence that was admitted at trial.
But he had in his possession or his knowledge that there was evidence, did he not?
No.
Didn't they somehow advise the prosecutor before that there were police reports, things of that nature?
There were police reports, but if you look at the substance of those police reports, they do anything but say it was Frederick McSwine. One police report references a photographic array that was shown to the people whose house was trespassed. The woman picked out the wrong person twice, and the man said, all I saw was a guy in a white T-shirt. The other police report dealt with some surveillance footage from a Casey's General store, which indicated there was a guy in a white T-shirt and khakis. Footage is fairly grainy, but they say it looks like it might be Frederick McSwine. It does nothing to place him in these people's house. The best it does is place him in Eagle, Nebraska, at roughly on the same date, which, frankly, there isn't any dispute about the fact that he was in Eagle, Nebraska at that point in time. The problem with the Court of Appeals opinion is that they're calling information evidence and basically conflating the two.
Did the Court of Appeals opinion discuss the jury instructions?
They did not. And the jury instructions, frankly, did take care of the issue. The jury instructions and the standard NJI Second 9.3 defines what evidence is. Evidence is the testimony exhibits which have been offered and received at trial. There was also the standard credibility instruction that was given to the jury. And as you look at the evidence, and I refer to evidence as the term of art that we use it as, the evidence was exactly what the state said in its closing argument. There is no other evidence other than the defendant's testimony that he committed this trespass, and the trespass was what he said was the basis for all his text messages about having to flee the country and the federal marshals are going to be hunting him down and so on and so on and so on. And the state said, that's essentially the state's argument was, that's silly. That's not what his text messages were referring to. His text messages were referring to him having sexually assaulted this woman, and that's why he was going to have to take off, because the federal marshals aren't going to hunt anybody down for a trespass, for heaven's sake. And the Court of Appeals, again, simply kept commingling the definition of what evidence is and what information is. And even if the information was the police reports, as we just discussed, the police reports simply don't establish that Frederick McSwine was the person who had committed this trespass. What the Court of Appeals' argument was that the state had essentially incorrectly attacked his... They had misled, I think was their exact words. They had misled the jury about the defendant's credibility. I don't even know how you do that. You're certainly entitled to attack somebody's credibility and argue that, look, what he's telling you is not really what happened. He's trying to minimize what had happened. We think our version of it, based on the evidence we presented to you, is that he sexually assaulted this woman, and he knew that was a massive screw-up, and that's why he was sending the text to his wife saying, honey, I'm going to have to run. He sent it to his friend going, buddy, I screwed up. I'm not going to make it out. See you later. That is an entirely appropriate argument to be made. It did not misrepresent the evidence that was adduced at the trial. It was exactly accurate of the evidence that was adduced at trial, and I think the Court of Appeals simply started out on the wrong foot by conflating evidence and information. That was the fatal error which led to its ultimate conclusion that the prosecutor misrepresented the facts to the jury. It did not do so.
What about the question the jury sent out?
The jury sent out a question saying, did the prosecutor say there was no evidence? And they even said something about including police reports that the defendant committed a trespass. I don't know where that came from, to be perfectly honest, but the district court gave them, frankly, the proper response. You've got all the evidence in front of you that you're going to get. Rely on your memories and see what you've got. And based on that that instruction to the jury deliberated and came back that and then found him guilty of the charges. I don't think, as you look at the as the evidence, and again, I emphasize the word evidence, that was adduced at trial and the prosecutor's closing argument, it was an entirely accurate reflection of what the evidence was at trial. There was no error in that, and we would ask this court to reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the conviction and sentences in this case. I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal if there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rapple, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Mark Rapple, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Frederick Swine. This is a petition for further review that's been granted by the court. As the court is aware, the Court of Appeals did reverse the conviction and remand for new trial. I think the key in this case is the nature of this misrepresentation by the prosecutor. I do believe the evidence does support a finding that this was a misrepresentation by the prosecutor during closing arguments that went unobjected to and uncorrected. And due to that, Mr.
Is the statement here, there is nothing in that supports McSwine's statement. Is that the one we're arguing about?
Yes, Judge. Actually, there
So it's nothing, not evidence or correct. Anything else? Nothing.
Judge, there were two statements made by the prosecutor. They were unqualified and unambiguous. The first statement during the initial closing argument was that unsupported by any evidence at all. It's just him saying that happened. Any evidence at all.
Did he use the word evidence?
He did. Judge, he didn't say unsupported by any evidence at all. He did use the word evidence. It's just him saying that. And then in rebuttal, he said, the prosecutor says again, quote, there is nothing that supports his statement or testimony that he ran through some house in Eagle. Nothing. It's just his word. And again, in the second statement or rebuttal, he didn't limit it to just evidence. He just said there's nothing to support it. And these text messages and jail-recorded phone calls were critical to the state's case. They spent lots of time, pages and pages of BOE, playing jail-recorded phone calls, playing these text messages, because the state was arguing these text messages were a de facto confession that Mr. McSwine committed this crime, when in fact Mr. McSwine's version of the explanation for these text messages and jail phone calls were to explain other criminal activity. And I completely disagree with the Attorney General's position that Mr. McSwine was trying to explain a mere trespass away. Mr. McSwine was on parole for a felony crime. He had admitted in these text messages and through his family members that he had committed law violations, including distribution of marijuana. He committed the offense of trespass. He admitted to using methamphetamine on the morning in question. He admitted to assaulting a person that he was going to sell drugs to before he made this home invasion and went into their house. These are not mere trespass allegations. This is someone who is on parole for a felony who knows they're going back to prison. So the statements about going to Mexico and fleeing and going to the reservation were not just to explain away a mere trespass. They were explaining away very, very serious law violations that would undoubtedly ended him up in prison again had the jig been up, so to speak. And that's why this is so critical. His explanations, this was a case about credibility, a he said, she said case. And by the state implying or misleading the jury to believe that there was no evidence at all to support this, it misled the jury.
The state is saying, but there isn't any evidence other than his own testimony. Is that what they're saying?
Unsupported by any evidence at all is the statement he said, yes.
Okay. So is that attacking his credibility?
I believe it is. I believe it's showing that the defendant's version of how this happened in a credibility case like this, a he said, she said case, that this couldn't possibly be true because there's no evidence to support it when the prosecutor, in fact, knew it was true. And this is a couple of distinctions I'd like to make. First off, the state seems to make a distinction between
Evidence and information.
Evidence at trial. But I think this is a legal distinction that clearly got lost in these jurors. The prosecutor never qualified these statements by saying evidence at trial. They never did that. They said no evidence at all.
Well, what about the Court of Appeals? Did they discuss the jury instructions?
They did not do a thorough job. I don't believe they did a job of instructing.
And don't the jury instructions define evidence?
Here's my response to that, Judge. Chief Justice seems to be implying that this was somehow cured by the district court directing them back to the jury instructions. Basically, the district court answered the question, you've received all the evidence you're going to receive in this case, and then referenced them to jury instruction number 10, which was closing arguments are not evidence. But even though we have these rules that say there aren't evidence, there's still ethical rules that apply in a case. Otherwise, we would have to have rules that say you can't say certain things in closing arguments. So jury instructions don't necessarily fix the problem every time. There could still be violations, even though the instructions themselves say that this is not evidence, you can't consider it as evidence. It still doesn't allow people to misrepresent and mislead the jury. And that's why this question by the jury is so critical. In exhibit number 121, the jury asks a specific question. Is what the prosecutor said true, that there's no evidence, even a police report, to support this? Why would the jury have to ask if a police report existed if they knew they were just referencing testimony at trial? The jury was clearly looking for evidence outside the trial because that went directly to what Mr. McSwine said happened. And the key, again, when you look back at the reports in this case, I again disagree with the Attorney General's characterization of what these police reports say. At the motion for new trial, exhibit number 118 was ACI number 39, which was introduced as evidence. And I am reading from this police report. There's no dispute. The state knew that this was Fred McSwine in Eagle at that time, that he was the one suspected of this home invasion. ACI number 39, exhibit number 18 says, quote, the Casey's video is of higher quality and shows the party believed to be McSwine enter the convenience store at 7:04 a.m. The party thought to be McSwine leaves at 7:11. And then it says, the bank video and external surveillance shows a vehicle similar to that which was driven by McSwine at the time of the sexual assault drive by the bank slowly. And then in another report, exhibit number 120, which was another ACI number 53 introduced by Investigator Bryant, says that he took a photo lineup of McSwine to the victim of the home invasion 8 months later, and she picked him falsely. She didn't pick the right person on the photo lineup. But the report indicates that she described him wearing the same clothes and the same description of the person that was seen in the Casey's video surveillance in Eagle that morning. And this report indicates that the witness also stated it has been 8 months, and she can't be sure. Elo did say that the deputy from the Cass County showed her a picture on a digital camera, the Casey's video, that morning of the incident, and she immediately identified him as the individual who came through her house. So the witness herself told this officer in ACI number 53 that she did positively identify Fred McSwine through this Casey's video surveillance camera the day or shortly after the incident, and it matched the description of the photo that was introduced. So there's no dispute that this... they had, and in the affidavit for new trial, the prosecutor had conversations with the defense attorney about the fact that he was aware McSwine was the one responsible, that he didn't intend to introduce any 404 evidence about that fact. The prosecutor had emailed the defense attorney about that. So again, the state was well aware that this person, McSwine, was the one suspected of the home invasion on the date of the question, and was critical to the crux of how this went. And going back to Chief Justice's question about this difference, could it be cured by looking back at the jury instruction? I don't believe this type of taint could be effectively cured by referencing back to a jury instruction that just says it's not evidence. This is not a case where an objection was made at trial. This was not a case where the court ordered that stricken from the record. This was not a case where the court gave a curative instruction. They simply didn't answer the question. They simply said, this is not evidence. Look at jury instruction number 10.
Can you go back a little bit to the what I think are the two challenged remarks?
Yes.
Right? And how do you think those are heard by a reasonable juror?
Again, jurors aren't legal scholars, and right. They're going to have to rely upon these jury instructions. But clearly, these jury instructions, which they presumably read before they wrote the question, is there any evidence at all, including a police report? I argue they would reasonably conclude that there is other evidence out there that would support what Mr. McSwine said.
But the comment by the prosecutor... with respect to going to someone else's house, quote, unsupported by any evidence at all. It's just him saying that.
Correct.
You believe that to be inaccurate?
I do believe that to be inaccurate.
Because there is other stuff that would support his testimony.
Correct, because there is...
And what is that other stuff?
Exhibit number 118, which is ACI number 39, was a police report authored by one of the investigators. And then there's ACI number 53, which is exhibit number 120, which is another evidence saying this existed. There's the affidavit Well,
but those, weren't in the evidence at the time of trial, were they?
Those are exhibits at the new trial motion.
They weren't evidence. Obviously, these wouldn't have been introduced as evidence, but the jury, when they asked the question, they specified including any police reports, which would lead a reasonable person to conclude that the jury relied upon what the prosecutor said to believe true, that there was no evidence at all. I don't think the jury's going to understand the distinction between evidence in court and evidence at all. When he said at all, he didn't qualify it.
The clear error here clearly could not have occurred during the trial. It's at the motion for new hearing. Is that correct?
I believe an error occurred at trial by the defense attorney not objecting to
But certainly not by the judge. The judge knew none of this.
But yeah, post-conviction at the motion for new trial, I think he erred in not granting a motion for a new trial. Because
at that point, the judge becomes aware that there's stuff outside the trial evidence. Because my question,
right,
rolling back, is what is it that the prosecutor said that a reasonable jury would have been misinformed about based on the trial evidence?
To answer your question, it's not just my answer. It's not just what the prosecutor said. It was what the prosecutor knew.
So your point is the prosecutor misrepresented to the jury.
He absolutely misrepresented the jury that there was no evidence at all. They grabbed onto that by asking a question, even any police reports. That went uncorrected. The prosecutor, it's not what he said to the jury, it's what he knew. The prosecutor knew at the time there was other evidence. He disclosed that to the defense attorney, told him he wasn't going to offer it as 404 evidence, gave him the ACIs that I mentioned. So he knew for a fact that there was evidence to support it, but he led the jury to believe that there wasn't.
How did the term police report find its way into that question from the jury? Have they been talking about police reports during this trial?
I don't believe so. I think the jury, again, when the prosecutor did not qualify his statement by saying there's no evidence at this trial, there's been no testimony of that. He said there's no evidence at all. And then the jury wrote their own question. Including a police report, which the prosecutor knew there were, and that error went uncorrected because of it. In a case like this, where there's credibility is everything, it's really destroying his credibility, and he said, she said, case it's
were these police reports exchanged in discovery and so forth?
They were, and in the affidavit for new trial, the trial counsel does mention in his affidavit they were turned over months before, and in fact, again, that provided this basis for the conversation that he and the prosecutor had. Prosecutor originally intended to perhaps offer that trespass as 404 evidence and discuss that with the defense attorney, and then told the defense attorney before trial, based upon these two reports that he turned over to the defense attorney, that he wasn't really introduced that evidence because he didn't intend to introduce it as 404 evidence. So yes, there were police reports that were turned over to the defense counsel before trial that indicated McSwine was the person suspected of assaulting the patient and on the Casey's video camera in Casey's the morning of the event, which matches his testimony as to why he made these incriminating text messages.
The Court of Appeals treats this as a failure to object, not a failure of defense counsel to offer police reports.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the Barfield case, I think what they're saying is that it's plain, and you can review it on plain error. Prosecutorial misconduct during closing arguments that went unobjected to would be plain error, and that you can review it on appeal for plain error. And I do believe that this would be plain error, and I believe that the opinion of the Court of Appeals should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time do we have for rebuttal?
3 minutes.
3 minutes and 5 seconds, Ms. Klein.
Your Honors, I come back again to the word evidence. It has a specific meaning in the legal context. It is not what the parties know is out there. It's not just information swirling in the ether. Evidence is that which has been admitted at trial. And nothing that had been admitted at trial other than McSwine's testimony made reference to that trespass.
What about the statement in rebuttal? Did that cover more, or was I... Did I mark that down incorrectly?
The statement in rebuttal, the prosecutor says his, meaning McSwine's, statements are only that. There is nothing that supports his statements or his testimony that he ran through some house in Eagle. It's just his word. In other words, all there is his testimony.
Well, that's a misrepresentation there.
No, it is not. Well, it is exactly what the evidence
What he
says.
Knew at that time? He wasn't mentioning evidence at that time.
He said there's nothing that supports his statements or testimony. If we start referring to quote-unquote evidence that exists outside the record, we're going to run into all kinds of problems. We have to refer to evidence. that exists in the record.
So do we run into any problems if a prosecutor deliberately misrepresents something? Is that even a bigger problem?
If there is a misrepresentation of what was said at trial, yes, there is. But this is not.
Well, how about that the question from the jury specifically referred to police reports?
I don't know where that came from, to be perfectly honest. I don't think anybody, either party, had referred to police reports at that point. I don't know where they pulled that from. I truly don't. First, the initial statement by the prosecutor, if you look at the entire statement, says, basically it's referring to McSwine's activities, says about, maybe even as early as 7 o'clock in the morning in Eagle, some simple trespassing where he walked through somebody's house, which is, by the way, unsupported by any evidence at all. But prosecutor goes on to say, it's just him saying that happened. In other words, he said that in his testimony. There is no evidence that you heard in the trial that supports that. You have his testimony. It's for you to believe or to not believe. And that is simply a reference to credibility. Do you believe what he is telling you or do you not believe? That's an entirely appropriate approach for the prosecutor to have taken.
But as Justice Connolly points to the second one, there is nothing that supports it, as in, doesn't say nothing, as in there is no evidence of. Could be heard as nothing in the universe that would support this.
Well, unfortunately, when we're making our closing arguments, we are constrained to the evidence that's been admitted at the trial. If we start making references to things outside the trial, I think you have basically ipso facto gotten yourself a mistrial. If we don't constrain ourselves to the evidence at trial, to the testimony and the exhibits that were admitted, that's what evidence is. That's all that can be argued during closing argument, and that's what the prosecutor was talking about. If it looked at in its appropriate context, the word evidence was entirely accurately used by the prosecutor in this case, we would ask that the Court of Appeals decision be reversed.
Ms. Klein, in addition to the final instructions which defined evidence, does the record show whether the jury at the beginning of the trial was given the preliminary instruction which defines evidence?
Honestly, I don't recall if the record shows that. I'm sure they were. I'm sorry, I don't recall if they were given.
Thank you.
If they are part of the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for today. The court is adjourned and you are excused.